one or two priests hurrying towards their churches for compline, the streets were deserted. Baldock began to cross the bridge, wincing as the handrail swayed alarmingly in time with his footsteps. He did not allow himself to dwell on the uncomfortable fact that repairs might have started that week if he had not stolen the money. It was to be one of the last thoughts he would ever have. The next morning, Baldock's body was found on the riverbank beneath the bridge. Sheriff Tulliott came to investigate and asked the university's corpse examiner, Dr. Bartholomew, for a cause of death. Bartholomew deduced that Baldock had died of a broken neck, sustained when he had toppled over the handrail to land on the shore below.
"Are you sure?"
asked Tulliott, doubtfully. Despite its lofty name, the Great Bridge was not very high.
"I could jump off this thing and not suffer so much as a scratch."
"Not if you went head first," explained Bartholomew.
"So, was it accident, suicide, or murder?"
asked Tulliott. For Baldock to end up in this position suggests a hard push or a vigorous jump, which rules out an accident. "Your clerk said he was in good spirits when he left last night."
"Not suicide either, then,"
said Tulliott.
"So he was murdered?"
"It seems most likely."
"He had been delivering bridge tax money to the castle," said Tulliott. "It subsequently went missing, although, as it happened when he was left alone with it, I do not need to look very far for the culprit."
"He stole it?" Bartholomew was shocked. "But he was a burgess."
"Which is probably why he thought he could get away with it,"
said Tulliott wryly.
"Had he lived, he would have learned otherwise."
"Well, there is no money with him now, so it was either stolen from his body, or someone else took or was given it before he died." Tulliott began to investigate, but learned nothing to tell him who had pushed the burgess to his death. Weeks passed, and although he hated the notion of a killer besting him, he was eventually forced to admit that there was no more he could do. Chapter 1. Cambridge, July 1360. Matthew Bartholomew, physician and fellow of the College of Michaelhouse, was in two minds about getting married in 11 days. On the one hand, he loved Mathilde with all his heart and was looking forward to spending the rest of his life with her. On the other, marriage was forbidden to scholars, which would mean an end to his teaching the mysteries of medicine. He would miss that more than he could say. He sat in the room he shared with four of his pupils and stared out of the window into the pre-dawn gloom. Michaelhouse had been his home for the greater part of two decades and had seen him pass from idealistic youth to pragmatic middle age. Its daily routine was deeply ingrained in his being, rising before dawn for church, breakfast in the hall, teaching and seeing patients until evening, and then preparing the next day's classes. How would he fare as a secular? Filling his time would be no problem. He was one of few town Medici willing to tend the poor, either for a nominal fee or free of charge, and they would continue to expect his services, regardless of whether or not he was a member of the university. However, when he left Michaelhouse, he would lose his college stipend, so his only income would be what he earned from medicine, which meant he would have to tout for wealthy clients. He experienced a pang of unease. What if the town's affluent elite declined to hire him? Mathilde was independently wealthy, but he could hardly expect to live off her for the rest of his life. Moreover, every spare penny she owned was being funneled into the school for women.